No Name by Wilkie Collins, dramatized by Ray Jenkins, with Sophie Thompson as Magdalene Vanston, Jack May as Captain Ragg, and Robin Ellis as Captain Kirk. Episode 6, December 1847. Magdalene Vanston has married her cousin under a false name in order to win back an inheritance for herself and her sister. But her husband, before his sudden death, altered his will in favor of Admiral Bartram and excluded her. Magdalene believes, however, a secret letter exists which will still allow her a claim to her rightful inheritance.
Do you understand, Louisa? In spite of the will, my only hope is to discover a letter we believe to be in Admiral Bartram's possession. So I need to be able to look about his house unsuspected and with time on my hands. That I can do if I'm received into St. Crewe as a servant.
But you're a lady. The servants would find you out.
I know how to disguise myself. Now, can you make me a servant's dress and alter one of my best silk dresses to fit yourself in a week?
But why?
I'll be giving the landlady her week's notice tomorrow. In the meantime, while you're making the dresses, I'll be learning the parlourmaid's duties. Then we'll go into new lodgings, you as the mistress and I as your maid.
I'd be found out. I'm not a lady.
And I am. Oh, you speak well. You're naturally self-restrained. There'll be time enough to practice for both of us. You'll even have time to make another dress for me and your own wedding robe. I'll have newspapers sent up every day, and when the advertisement appears, I'll answer it.
Oh, ma'am, you frighten me.
You get the money for Australia the day the advertisement appears. By the time I'm in Admiral Bartram's house, you'll be married and on your way to a new life.
How can I ever...
Oh, you owe me no thanks. We're only helping each other. What money I have, I give it to you freely. If I succeed, I shan't want it. If I fail, well, take till morning to consider. I'll want no help tonight.
Oh, ma'am.
Oh, don't distress me. The time for tenderness has gone. It only hurts me now.
Good night, ma'am.
Good night.
And, ma'am, it's yes.
Dear Mr. Pendrell, I write, as you kindly requested, to report how Nora is going on. I cannot say she is resigned to Magdalene's continued silence, but as Mr. George Bartram's visits to Portland Place grow more and more frequent, I can assure you she is finding relief under her suspense. The oftener I see Mr. Bartram, the stronger my liking for him increases. If I could live to see Nora, his wife, I should almost feel I'd lived long enough. Have you heard anything of Magdalene? I don't know how or why it is, but since her husband's death, my old tenderness for her seems to cling to me more obstinately.
Of Mrs. Noel Vanston herself, I have heard nothing. But I have learned that no legacy of any kind is bequeathed to her in her husband's will. My dear Miss Garth, that nothing whatsoever has been heard of her since her husband's death is suggestive in my mind of serious mischief to come. I therefore strongly urge you to use your influence on every occasion possible to strengthen Miss Nora's attachment to Mr. George Bartram. When I tell you that the fortune of which her sister Magdalene has been deprived is entirely bequeathed to Admiral Bartram, and when I add that Mr. George Bartram is generally understood to be his uncle's heir.
The illness of my niece, Mrs. Girdleston, which appeared to be slight and alarmed none of us, has ended fatally. Mr. George has already gone to her husband's, and I must follow. As we propose to take Mr. Girdleston away after the funeral, I will be absent from St. Crewe a month or 6 weeks. Mrs. Drake, you will therefore tell the new parlour maid of the change in arrangements. If she's willing to wait, engage her.
Meow. Ah!
Oh, excuse me, sir. Which one's Mrs. Drake's room?
Ah, you're the new one, eh? His Honour like a parlour maid with a clean run, fore and aft. You'll do, my dear. You'll do.
Louis, sir. Come in.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Drake.
Thank you, Mr. Maisie.
Yeah.
Mustn't mind what Mr. Maisie says to you. He's served all his life with the Admiral, and he's privileged to talk as he pleases. He's very tiresome and slovenly, but he means no harm, and he makes model boats. Right, I'll show you the pantry, the linen room. Then we'll go up onto the first floor, and you can prepare the cloth. The Admiral will be dining alone.
Aye, aye, aye. What's your name, my good girl?
Louisa, sir.
I'll call you Lucy, if you don't mind. Take the cover off, my dear. Did my sprung cart bump you about much?
No, sir.
Capital soup. Hot as fire. Reminds me of what one had in the West Indies in the year 3. You got half morning on?
Yes, sir.
Not afraid of Labradors, are you?
Oh, I love dogs, sir.
That's right. These two dine with me every day. Except when there's company. Black nose is Brutus, the white nose Cassius. You know who they were?
Ancient Romans, sir.
Mind your book and your needle. We'll get you a good husband yet. Now then, finish it up. Very good. Tell the cook, my dear. Capital cream.
The wine is ready, sir. Shall I retire?
No, stop. You don't know the ways of the house yet, Lucy. Put the largest glass you can there. That's it. Fill it. I've got a third dog to pleasure. Come in. God bless the Queen, Maisie.
God bless the Queen, Your Honour.
How's the wind, Maisie?
West by north, Your Honour.
Any report tonight, Maisie?
No report, Your Honour.
Good evening, Maisie.
Good evening, Your Honour.
For what we've received, the Lord make us truly thankful. Downstairs now, Lucy. A light meal, if you'll take my advice, or you'll have a nightmare. Early to bed, early to rise, etc. Get to know your way around. Good night.
Put your back against that there wall. Look straight afore you. What do you see?
A long corridor with windows overlooking the courtyard. Doors leading into rooms.
What else?
The opposite wall.
And? And?
Nothing.
You see one of the points of the compass. You see north. Now, if you get lost hereaway, put your back against the wall and say to yourself,
I see north.
That's right. Now, come you on. Library. Away we go. Locked. Locked. Now, at the end here, now put your back against that wall.
And I'll be facing east.
Hey, never you talk about the east, my dear, till you know the east first. Now, you asked me to show you. Now, what do you see?
Two more rooms. And I'm looking east.
That's right, the east wing. Drawing room. Now, come through. Cool. Put your apron over your head. We're going to the banquet hall now. The floor's mortal cold. His Honour call it the Arctic Passage. I call it Freeze Your Bones.
On her left, Magdalene saw lofty windows covering a length of 60 feet.
Opposite them, a dismal collection of black, begrimed pictures of battle scenes rotting from their frames. Below the pictures yawned a huge black cavern of a fireplace. The one object visible in the vast emptiness was a gaunt ancient tripod, supporting a wide circular pan filled deep with ashes from an extinct charcoal fire. The high ceiling was foul with dirt and cobwebs, and the naked walls at either end were stained with damp.
Don't you ever light a fire here?
Oh, that depends. His Honour like to shift his quarters. If he lives north, we don't waste our coals here. If he lives south of Freeze Your Bones, we light the fire in the grate and the charcoal in the pan. Every night when we do that, the damp get the better of us. Every morning, we turn to again and get the better of the damp. Same rooms here as t'other inn, four, see?
The gardens are overgrown. Are there any more rooms I should see?
No, we're on the ground here. Now, come you on. Back to the drawing room, my dear.
What about the second floor?
Ah, now, you know your points of the compass.
Yes, thank you. Are there any more rooms to see upstairs?
Yes, my dear, you're right. Oh, that's chilly. If I don't get back to me boots, my fire will go out.
By ascending the stairs immediately, Magdalene found the second floor rooms to be bedchambers. Then outside one room, she saw a low truckle bed, parallel to the wall. Sheets were on it, and the end of a thick red fisherman's cap peeped out from under the pillow. She realized the room was the Admiral's. Why, with bedrooms to spare, should old Maisie sleep outside his master's door?
Old Maisie's shown you the pints of the compass, Lucy?
Yes, sir. I know it's wrong, sir, but I went on the second floor to see if it was as long as the first.
A fine soup. Hot.
I noticed an old truckle bed by a wall.
Doesn't concern you, my dear. Don't be too curious. Look in your Old Testament when you go downstairs. See what happened in the Garden of Eden through being inquisitive. Be a good girl. Don't imitate your mother Eve.
Late that night, Magdalene, on her way to her room, passed the end of the second floor passage. Slipping round the screen left to hide the corridor, and shading the light from a candle, she advanced to the Admiral's door. The bed had been placed exactly across the doorway, barring all entry or exit. And in his red fisherman's hat, Maisie snored lustily in it. Thanks to the abundance of bedchambers at St. Crewe, every servant could have her own room, if she so wished. There, Magdalene could dare to be herself again. My dream of the past. And wake encountering no curious eyes to notice that she was in tears.
How's the wind, Maisie?
West be north, Your Honour.
Any report tonight?
No report, Your Honour.
Fill Maisie's glass again. That's a good girl.
Sir?
Recall young Mr. Noel's housekeeper, Mrs. Lecomte? Careful, my dear, careful.
Sorry, sir. I do, Your Honour.
She's proved a lesson to us all.
Oh.
Report here. She's settled part of her money on a Lecomte scholarship, University of Geneva.
What?
The rest, where is it? Ah, yes. For the maintenance and education of a certain number of orphan girls, natives of Zurich, for domestic service in later life. Zurich is to be congratulated on the possession of such a paragon of public virtue. Indeed. Drink, Maisie.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good evening, Your Honour.
Good evening, Maisie.
Mr. Maisie.
My dear.
Why has the tripod been lit in the banqueting hall?
Ah, His Honour's a crossing of the Arctic Passage. Summer, I told you. He liked to shift his quarters to the east.
But we're still winter.
Exactly. His Honour gets worried about the rooms in the east in the winter. Furniture, pictures, the bowls. And he has to inspect them with his own eyes. So, for days before he does, we warp up all freezer bones. When his Honour's satisfied all shipshape, That's locked up till summer's back, me fine poplar.
When will he do his inspection?
Yesterday, me dear. His mind set at rest.
Assuming the Admiral was most likely to keep all his important documents within easy reach of his own hand, Magdalen began to feel certain the secret trust was secured in one or other of the rooms in the North Wing. But which? The library appeared to be the place where, if he had a preference, he passed the greater part of his time.
Lucy.
You called, sir?
Yes. Don't shut the door. Oh. I'm a man rigidly careful with my keys. I like things locked, you understand, in their place, shipshape. Now, please help me. I keep my smaller keys on a ring, usually here in my waist pocket. I've mislaid it. Now, help me. It makes me fret. Oh, do have a good look, my dear.
Yes, sir.
I'll try the dining room again. Oh, I'm sorry, Lucy. It was in my other pocket. Thank you. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, sir.
The larger keys, she'd noted, he kept in a small basket, which always accompanied him to bed at night. From time to time, the original wildness in old Maze's nature would break out. He'd disappear in the afternoon and reappear at night as drunk as liquor could make him. Try as hard as they might, the servants could never succeed in persuading him he was drunk. He had his own method. He would stagger into his den and see if he could complete the rigging on his never-finished model ship. Only when he'd smashed the tiny spars and snapped the guy ropes...
Point north!
...would he ascend to the upper corridor, avoid his bed, and zigzag himself sober, up and down outside the Admiral's room.
This is an uncommonly lively vessel in a seaway. Aye, the women are right. Drunk again, Maisie. Drunk again. Please, Your Honour, I'm ashamed of myself.
This mustn't happen again, Maisie.
Oh, it shan't happen again, Your Honour.
Very good. Drink a glass of wine.
Yeah, oh.
God bless the Queen, Maisie.
God bless the Queen, Your Honour.
Louisa?
Ma'am?
Lay the table for two persons. Mr. George Bartram will be returning to St. Croix this afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
Fill the glasses, Lucy. Then you can leave us. You see, George, you set her a dither.
Yes.
You can go now, Lucy. You look out of sorts.
I'm a little anxious, yes, sir.
Glad to hear it. Your time comes to an end on the 3rd of May, and there you sit as if you still had years before you were to turn round in.
You are resolved to bind me to that incomprehensible condition.
I don't call it that. Drink.
I'm to inherit your estate unconditionally, as you've generously settled it from the first, but I'm not to touch a farthing of the fortune poor Noel left you, unless I'm married by May. The house and lands are to be mine, but the money to improve them is to be taken away. I may be wanting in intelligence, but I find that incomprehensible.
Say you're out, sir. We don't understand sneering at Her Majesty's Navy.
I mean no offence, sir. But I see a proceeding entirely foreign to my experience of your character. If you and Noel came to some private arrangement together before...
You're trying to draw me like a badger, but I won't be. I'll make any condition I please. Good God, here's a pretty fellow. He's a round dozen of nice girls, to my certain knowledge, pining on the stem. He's asked to help himself to a fortune and a wife.
I'm sorry to have offended you.
Stick to your wine and I'll forgive you. Now look at those sponge cakes.
No, thanks.
Cook has sent them up in honour of your return. Hey, you two. There. I wish you could solve our problem as fast.
I am ready to marry tomorrow, if the lady will have me.
The devil! Oh, why in heaven's name couldn't you tell me before? Fill your glass! Here's her health. Who is she?
I said at starting I was anxious, sir, because I'm afraid you'll disapprove of my choice.
Don't beat about the bush.
She's the elder daughter of Andrew Vanston of Coombe Raven.
You're right, George. I do disapprove strongly.
Is it the misfortune of her birth?
God forbid.
You object to her sister?
Certainly.
It's hard, sir, to make Miss Vanston suffer for her sister's faults.
Crime, sir?
Well, whatever, sir. It remains hard on Miss Vanston, whose life is pure of all reproach. Ask Miss Garth. Ask Mrs. Tyrrell.
I'll admit, if you like, she's the best woman that ever put on a petticoat. That is not the question.
Excuse me, Admiral. It is, if she's to be my wife.
Look at it from my point of view. Noel, your cousin, fell a victim, poor fellow, to one of the vilest conspiracies I ever heard of. And the prime mover was Miss Vanston's damnable sister. If you marry Miss Vanston, the wretch becomes your sister-in-law, a member of the family. She becomes our disgrace. Good heavens, George, consider what pitch you touch.
Now, sir, let me put my side. Every time I see her, her beauty grows on me. Her character grows on me. When I'm away from her, I'm restless, anxious. When I'm with her, I'm simply the happiest man alive. Her sister's vices only make her good qualities all the more precious to me by contrast. My wife's sister is not essential to my happiness, but my wife is. Right or wrong, if my marriage is essential to the execution of your intentions on my behalf, there is only one woman in the world I can marry, and that woman is Miss Vanston.
Are you engaged?
No, sir. I thought it due to your uniform kindness to me to speak to you on the subject first.
Much obliged. Do you think Miss Vanston will say yes when you ask her? Devil take your modesty!
I think she will, sir.
You're wrong, George. But it's too late now to set you right. On the 16th of next month, the banns must be put up in Ossory Church, or you'll lose the money. How long do you propose stopping here this time?
A few days.
Will a week give you time to pick your opportunity with Miss Vanston? 7 days out of the fortnight or so you have to spare?
I'll stay a week, Admiral. With pleasure, if you wish it.
I don't. There's an invitation among your papers. I want you to pack up your traps and be off and stay with Sir Frederick Brock at the Grange.
You are entirely mistaken in me. My attachment to Miss Vanston is not to be shaken in that way. Miss Brock is not for me.
If I'm willing to make concessions, the least you can do is meet me halfway. You can't deny, George, you've been in love with a good many women in your time. Among them, Miss Brock.
Flirtation is not serious attachment.
Likely enough. But I happen to have known you since you were the height of my old telescope. I must be satisfied. Stay a week in Miss Brock's company. Then, when you come back, if you tell me, as an honest man, your attachment to Miss Vanston remains unshaken, you will have heard the last of my objections from that moment.
Louisa?
Ma'am?
What are you doing? None of your duties allow you here.
I still get lost, Mum.
After 3 weeks? Are you feeling unwell?
I'll be all right, Mum. Will Mr. George be dining again tonight with the...
No, he's already left. Now, get on with your work.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, Captain, my mind is going. My mind is going. I can't find anything. I'm so lonely.
You are ill.
I've been used to more exercise, ma'am, than I take here.
Is there anything you want?
Might I go into the garden and try what the air will do for me?
Certainly. I'll send someone to go with you.
Oh, no, really, Mama. I can manage.
Put your bonnet on and shawl and come to my room afterwards and we'll see how you are. There'll be no need to wait at dinner. The Admiral intends leaving for London. Wrap up well.
I'm like an old woman. Just when I need every bit of strength, it's failing me. Oh, no. No, keep walking. I will not fail. I must keep looking.
I hear as you're better.
Yes, thank you, Dawes. Oh, they're lovely.
They ought to be. The exercise they get. Mr. George no sooner back than gone again. Admiral going to London. And coming back, temper black as pitch.
Why?
Well, Admiral never swears at me, never. And there he is mad at me for overdriving these artists, he says. Me. Oh, they're my children.
He's the same at table. Oh, I must go. Sir?
In the drawing room, the heavy sliding door was pulled back, and the arctic atmosphere of Freeze Your Bones was pouring unhindered into the empty room. A tall figure in greatcoat and hat hurried towards her.
What are you doing here?
I answered the bell, sir.
Oh, yes, to be sure. I did ring, then I forgot it. Coles, I rang for Coles.
Yes, sir. He looked guilty. That's where it is, the secret trust in the East Wing. He's locked it there. I know he has.
Even if she was wrong, she'd go and look. Cross the banqueting hall when no prying eyes were open and no accident to be feared, in the dead of night.
I shrank from nothing to get here. What madness possesses me that I shrink now? I'll count the strips of moonlight three times over. Then go. One, two, three, four, five. One, two, three, four, five. One, two, three, four, five.
A solitary figure rose out of the farthest strip of moonlight on the floor, to disappear and reappear in the second, coming towards her, crossing the remaining silver strips straight to the spot where she stood. It was the Admiral, sleepwalking, barefoot.
And how will my good fellow take it back again? It worries me day and night. I don't know where it's safe. I don't know where to put it. Take it back, Noel. Take it back. Take it. Take it back, Noel. Take it back. Take it.
Magdalene could read her husband's handwriting at the top of the letter. The trust was within reach. But at that instant, he turned and faced her. On the impulse of the moment, she stretched out her hand toward the letter. The yellow candlelight fell full on him. The awful death in life of his face, the mystery of the sleeping body, moving in unconscious obedience to the dreaming mind, daunted her. Her hand trembled and dropped again at her side.
Yes. Safer there, as you say, Noel. Safer.
And she followed him in slow and noiseless progress to his room. Outside, the truckle bed was empty. shading the candlelight, she looked down on her master. The dream was past. The old man's sleep was deep and peaceful. His lips were still. She took the basket of keys from the table and left for the east wing again.
Beg you to consider this large legacy as intended to be. And intended to be. If your nephew fails to comply with these conditions, that is to say, if being either a bachelor or a widower at the time of my decease, he fails to marry in all respects as I have here instructed him to marry, within 6 calendar months from that time, it is my desire that he shall not receive...
Jezebel! Next time you take to night walking in Frasier Bones, use them sharp eyes of yours first. And make sure there's nobody else a night walking in the garden. Drop it, Jezebel, drop it! Now, come and be locked up. There'll be a court's inquiry tomorrow morning. And I'm a witness. You young jade, you committed burglary. That's what you done. Now, come you on.
Oh, don't hurt me. I'm frightened, Mr. Maisie. I'm dreadfully frightened. I think my mind will go. Don't hurt me.
I'm a deal too fond of you to hurt you. You, if I let go, will you walk straight before me, straight to your door?
Yes.
I'll leave a candle be. You're a trifle quicker on your pegs than I am.
Oh, Mr. Maisie, you don't know the hard measure you've dealt me. Taking that letter from my hand.
Dear Miss Garth, I have just written with a heavy heart to my uncle, and I think I owe it to your kind interest in me not to omit writing next to you. In the fewest and plainest words, Miss Vanston has refused me. She firmly declared that her family misfortunes left her no honourable alternative. Am I to understand by that phrase the misfortune for which her parents alone are to blame, or the liability of her having such a woman as Mrs. Noel Vanston for her sister? In whichever of these circumstances the obstacle lies, it is no obstacle in my estimation. Can nothing remove it? Is there no hope? Neither she, nor you, nor anyone but myself can know how I love her.
I'm afraid the original cause of all the mischief is no less a person than the Admiral himself. He obviously took it into his head recently to check on Nora at the Tyrrells, and in the course of conversation talked about her sister. He declared himself sorry for Nora, for who could marry her without first making it a condition that she and her sister were to be absolute strangers to each other. So you can now understand the true motive for her refusal. Can the harm be remedied? My advice is, don't take no for an answer. Give Nora time to regret her decision. And in the meantime, use your influence over your uncle to persuade him into setting matters right again.
First, Mr. George, on the day when the girl's treacherous conduct was discovered and her instantly removing herself from the house, my master told me himself he'd been dreadfully disappointed by a letter from you from foreign parts. Sir, I have never seen him so distressingly upset in all the years I've been in his service. Then, at night, he's worse. He couldn't bear Mr. Maisie breathing at the door, and he ordered him to sleep in the next room. So, the obvious happened, despite us sitting up. We discovered he'd been barefoot to the East Wing rooms, through the banqueting hall, under the impression he'd passed the night as usual in his bed. His health is now giving us cause for some concern.
When did the Admiral die?
On the 4th at St. Crewe. You appear upset. You knew him?
Oh, no. No, I'm just very tired. What do we do now?
Now we know the provisions of the will, I feel the wisest course is to open communications at once with his executors and try to cause a search to be made for the trust.
Will they comply?
They are men of high standing.
Thousands and thousands of letters have been examined, and not one of them, my dear Miss Garth, bears the remotest resemblance to the letter we have agreed to look for. If you think it right to communicate the contents of this letter to Miss Vanstone, pray tell her that it will not be my fault if her sister's assertion is not fairly put to the proof.
No such document as the secret trust has been found among his papers. Under these circumstances, the executors have decided on acting under the only recognizable authority which they have to guide them, the Admiral's own will. The will is plain, and the result inevitable. Your husband's fortune is lost to you from this moment. Mr. George Bartram legally inherits it, as he legally does the house and estate of St. Crewe. The trust may have been destroyed or hidden somewhere inaccessible.
Dear Mr. Loscombe, because I've taken letters for Mrs. Vanstone addressed to you, you're the only one I can turn to. I beg to inquire whether you know any of her friends, because I think they should be stirred up to take some steps about her. She's due to leave my house end of next week, as she can't afford to remain. I know nothing of where she's going or what she's going to do next. I think she desires to destroy any trace of herself, because I found her yesterday burning letters, in tears. Her looks have changed most shockingly in the last weeks. I think there's some dreadful trouble on her mind, and she's on the edge of a serious illness. It's very sad to see such a young woman deserted and without friends like she is now. Excuse me troubling you. Your humble servant, Catherine Ruddock.
Madam, my only connection with Mrs. Noel Vanstone was a professional one, and that connection is now at an end. I'm not acquainted with any of her friends, and I cannot undertake to interfere personally either with her present or future proceedings. Regretting my inability to afford you any assistance, I remain your obedient servant, John Loscombe.
On the 11th of June, the merchantman Deliverance, back from the China Seas, was towed into the East India dock. The next day, Captain Kirk made arrangements for visiting his sister in Aldborough, who soon brought him up to date with the local news.
Mr. John Loscombe.
I beg your pardon,
please,
sir.
Please, please forgive me, sir. Allow me to explain myself. Only you can help me discover Mrs. Noel Vanstone.
Who are you?
My name is Kirk. I'm a merchant sea captain. We docked 4 days ago. My sister, who lives in Aldborough, attended the wedding of Mr. Noel Vanstone and Miss Susan Bygrave, to which you were a witness.
Yes.
What small right I have to be here is, my sister tells me Mr. Vanstone's death was reported in the papers some months ago.
Indeed.
For my own peace of mind, I wish to be of any possible help to Mrs. Vanstone, should she, of course, need it. With that in mind, I traced you to this office.
You know nothing of her present state?
No.
I trust you may arrive in time, sir. I can give you her last known address. It's in Camden Town at the house of a Mrs. Ruddock.
Are you a friend?
Yes.
I've kept
kept her a fortnight now.
It's all right, I'll cover that.
It's not my fault. There. That's her.
Poor Papa. Why do you look so sorry, poor Papa?
Does that cover what she owes you?
Oh, sir, yes.
For the moment, she'll keep that room. Is there a doctor who can be depended on?
Not here, sir. There's one half an hour's walk.
Take the cab. Bring him back in it. He shall be well paid, and you. Hurry.
Yes.
If it's ordained that I am to see her again, I shall see her.
It is a dangerous illness. May I ask you a question which is not strictly medical?
Yes.
Can you tell me what her life has been before she came into this place?
I have no means of knowing. I've just returned to England after a long absence. I only discovered her by accident. I see my position surprises you. Will you consider it one of a brother or a father until her friends can be found? I have taken this trust on myself, and as God shall judge me, I will not be unworthy of it.
I respect that. No common cause will account for her illness. She has suffered some long-continued mental trial, and she's broken down under it. I'd hoped my question might have helped discover the nature of that trial.
Is there danger to her reason or her life?
Both. Her whole nervous system has given way. The fever is merely the effect. Or she may, for weeks to come, pass alternately without a gleam of consciousness from delirium to repose. You must not be alarmed if her sleep lasts far beyond the natural time. It's a far better remedy than any I can give.
Can I take her from here?
Oh, no, no. She has already been disturbed, and she's seriously the worse for it. The least excitement or alarm could be fatal. Oh, the landlady has my directions, and I will send a good nurse to help her. So far as her life can be said to be in any human hands, it is in yours as much as mine.
The house must be kept quiet.
Yes, sir.
Who lives here?
Only me and my daughter, sir. Times have gone bad with us since Lady Day. Both rooms above are to let.
I'll take them. Send your daughter for a messenger.
Yes, sir.
Two letters were sent. One to his sister, the other to the landlord of the Aldborough Hotel. Bygrave was the only name Kirk knew Magdalen by, and the name, the one chance of tracing her uncle and aunt.
How is she?
Well, she was awake, but mentally wandering a few minutes since. But we've succeeded in composing her, and she's sleeping now.
She knows me, sir. She knows me.
Shh, madam.
If I mustn't be happy, I'll be the death of me.
Has she eaten? I want to know everything.
Who's so anxious about me? Who?
I'm a doctor, and my name's Merrick.
Doctor.
My dear.
Who is asking for me?
It's only me.
Matilda.
Bless her. Oops! Oh, lost me shoe. Look, she's well enough to laugh at me already. Cheers, boys, cheers.
Madam, please, quiet.
Oh, no, I'm not ladylike, I know. It's my head, sir, it isn't me. I must give vent somehow or my head'll burst.
Who is he?
My dear girl, I've shifted, since we last saw each other, from moral agriculture to medical. Formerly, I preyed on public sympathy. Now it's on the stomach. The founders of my fortune, three little purgatives, Aloe, Scammony, and Gambode. In plain words, I am, on profit culled from the entertainment, a grand financial fact. With my clothes positively paid for, a balance of my bankers, my servants in livery, and my gig at the door. Solvent, flourishing, popular. And all on a pill. No laughing matter, ma'am, to the public. Even Mrs. Ragg contributes her quota to this prodigious enterprise. She alone is the celebrated woman whom I have cured of indescribable agonies from every complaint under the sun. Her portrait shines from every wrapper. I had to test Aura. Now I have an emporium there, which brought me to you.
And her name is Magdalene Vanston. The whole story, sirs.
You may be our solution, sir. The problem is, on the one hand, we can't tell her the truth without awakening painful recollections. On the other, we irritate and alarm her by leaving her questions unanswered.
But, Captain, you can tell her I felt I have a hereditary right to help and protect her as my father's son.
Trust me.
Who is it keeps asking after me?
A friend.
Your friend lives here.
He's the son of one of your father's old military friends from Canada days. Your cheeks mustn't flush up. If they do, I shall go away.
What's his name?
Kirk.
There was an officer who'd been very good to my father. Is Mr. Kirk poor?
No.
Then why is he living here?
He discovered you by chance. Very ill and not nicely attended to. Don't tug my superfine sleeve.
How does he know me? Where did he see me?
Once, some time ago. I can't say exactly.
Only once? Then how did he remember me when he found me here?
When you're well enough to get up and see Mr. Kirk, try how that question sounds in his ears and insist on him answering it himself.
I want to ask you...
My time is up. I'm off to plough the field of public indigestion northwards. Oh, by the by, a message from my unfortunate wife. If you'll allow her to come again and see you, Mrs. Ragg solemnly promises not to lose her shoe. I don't believe her, but may she come?
Whenever she likes. If ever I get well again... May she come and stay with me?
Willingly.
Captain.
My dear.
I want to see Mr. Kirk.
Good morning.
Give me your hand. Oh, you've been so kind. And how little I've deserved it. Where did you see me before you saw me here? Is it true you'd only seen me once?
Quite true.
How came you to remember me after only seeing me once?
I have a good memory.
What with her up and dressed and monopolizing your time, I felt our patient was strong enough at last to risk, all risks, so I wrote to Mr. Pendrell. The lawyer.
Yes?
My dear fellow, you are out of sorts. He referred me to a Miss Garth, who tells me an even sadder tale than Captain Ragg. Miss Vanstone's only relation in the world is her elder sister, and I've suggested she writes here in the first instance, and then if the letter does no harm, follow it with a visit. Oh, you're used to plenty of air, Captain. You're beginning to pine in this close place.
When her sister comes, you'll allow Miss Vanstone to be taken away?
Decidedly. If my advice is followed, she'll be well enough to be moved in a week or less. I'll say goodbye for the moment. Your hand feels feverish. Pining for the blue water, Captain? That it?
My dearest Magdalene,
I'm strictly forbidden to agitate or weary you by writing a long letter. But is it wrong to tell you I am the happiest woman living? My darling, it's only a week today since I parted with my old name. I am now the happy wife of George Bartram of St. Crewe. And you were the cause of it. If I had not gone to Aldborough searching for you, we might never have met. I must keep my promise not to weary you. So, to positive things. George and I are both coming to London to take you back with us to Ventnor. This is my husband's invitation as well as mine. I could say so much more.
Oh, Nora, you've deserved it.
They'll take you away, I suppose, to some better place than this.
They can take me to no dearer friend than the one who has saved my life.
We've been very happy here. You won't forget me when we've said goodbye.
Why do you talk of it?
Well, I thought...
I would leave you here, not knowing or caring whether I ever saw you again. You don't think that of me.
No. No, I can never think unjustly or unworthily of you.
There is a reason for my not going away, unless I first have the assurance of seeing you again. You have the strongest claim of anyone to know how I came here, and how it was you found me fallen so low.
I make no such claim. I wish to know nothing which distresses you.
You have always done your duty. Let me take an example from you and try to do mine.
I'm old enough to be your father. Duty is more easily done at my age than...
At mine? You don't know how I value your good opinion of me. Help me to tell you the truth. Force me. For my own sake, if not for yours.
Would it be easier for you to write it?
Yes. But don't write to me when you've read it. Wait till we meet to tell me.
Where?
Here. If I come back in a month... Oh, but I'm thinking only of myself. You have business friends, your ship.
If you come back in a month, you will find me here.
Promise it?
Yes, it's a promise.
Miss Garth had always wanted to see St. Crewe, so we took up George's invitation while he was abroad forgetting me. And we were shown all over the house. It was the most...
Oh, don't attempt to describe it. Just go on with your story.
We were in this long, cold room. A banqueting hall, I think, at some time. And the housekeeper kept trying to lecture us on the brass scrollwork on the legs of a tripod affair. I wasn't really listening. I was thinking of George. And then I suddenly noticed amongst the ashes a folded letter, unburnt.
The secret trust.
Hold out your hand, my dear. There.
You found it.
Yes. Your lawyer was right. You did have an interest in its discovery. If Mrs. Girdlestone had lived, or George married me a few months earlier, results would have been different. As it is, the money is to be divided between Mr. Noel Vanston's next of kin. That means half to my husband. The other half, my darling, is yours. Oh, Magdalene, it's only 2 years since you and I were nobody's children. Now we're sharing our poor father's fortune between us, after all. Magdalene!
I will owe nothing to my past life. I've done with it.
George will never allow you.
The end I dreamed of has come. The fortune is in your hands. Better as this, my love. Far, far better. You hardly expected me so soon. I wonder if you are as happy to see me again as I am to see you.
Perhaps even happier.
I suppose the street's very ugly and how small, but it feels like coming home again. Did you receive my letters?
Yes.
Have you read them?
Every one. Many times.
I've told you everything.
May I speak about them?
No. Not just yet. Not so soon after we've met again, please. You were writing a letter about your ship. They want you to return to your old life. They want you to go back to sea. Must you say yes or no?
Yes.
If I'd not come in when I did, would you have said yes?
I was doubting between yes and no.
Because of me?
Yes.
Oh, do I deserve my happiness? Oh, tell me, if you have one shadow of a doubt that the one dear object of all my life is to live for you. I asked you to wait and see me. If there's any hard truth to be told, oh, tell it, my love, tell it me now.
With my own lips.
Yes. Say what you think of me with your...
That was the final episode of No Name by Wilkie Collins, dramatized by Ray Jenkins. Magdalene Vanston was played by Sophie Thompson and Captain Kirk by Robin Ellis. Captain Ragg was played by Jack May, Mrs. Ragg by Vivian Pickles, Admiral Bartram by Alan McNaughton, and George Bartram by Christopher Scott. Miss Garth was Kathleen Helm, Maisie Peter Tugnham, Nora Elizabeth Mansfield, and Mrs. Drake Joe Manning Wilson. Christopher Good played Loscombe, Joanna Mackey, Mrs. Ruddock, David Googe, Dr. Merrick, Susan Sheridan, Louisa, John Moffat, Mr. Pendrell, and the narrator was Philip Sully. The music was by Peter Brewis and played by Maurice Cambridge. Technical presentation was by Peter Novis, Roger Daines, and Keith Graham. The director was Janet Whittaker.